From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, a federal judge rules that fetal tissue doesn't have to be buried or cremated in Texas. And as Brett Kavanaugh goes through his Supreme Court confirmation hearings, what are the implications for reproductive rights in Texas and the nation? This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. A federal judge blocked the Texas laws requiring the burial or cremation of fetal tissue that resulted from an abortion or miscarriage. The decision stated the measures placed a substantial and unconstitutional obstacles in the path of a woman's right to choose an abortion. U.S. District Judge David Ezra issued the permanent injunction preventing the measure from going into effect. He wrote, "The evidence in this case overwhelmingly demonstrated that if the challenged laws were to go into effect now, they would likely cause a near catastrophic failure of the health care system designed to serve women of childbearing age within the state of Texas." Texas developed the regulations on fetal tissue disposal in 2016, shortly after the U.S. Supreme Court struck down separate abortion restrictions regarding doctors and facilities. That tissue disposal regulation was blocked by a federal ruling, and in 2017, the legislature passed the requirement as part of an anti-abortion bill. The law required providers to bury or cremate the fetal tissue and ensure that it was not disposed of in the manner that medical waste is typically disposed of. The law did not apply to miscarriages or abortions that happened outside a medical facility. This federal judge's decision comes as the U.S. Senate is performing its constitutionally ordered advise and consent function in selecting a new justice for the U.S. Supreme Court, which is where it might seem like reproductive rights are in jeopardy as the high court becomes ever more conservative. I spoke with Jonathan Sines, attorney for Texas Values, about the fetal tissue ruling and the future of Roe v. Wade.
You know, this is the type of activist judge we will be seeing less of in Texas that was part of this ruling, as we see President Trump fills court vacancies with judges who respect the Constitution and the rule of law. We applaud the Attorney General of our state, Ken Paxton, and his team for their great work defending the Texas law and the dignity of aborted children. The bodies of aborted babies deserve to be treated with respect, and they should no longer callously be treated like medical waste and disposed of, as current law allows, by grinding and discharging them into the sanitary sewer system.
You mentioned Attorney General Ken Paxton. He is going to appeal. Where do you see that going?
Well, it's important to appreciate the law that's in question, Senate Bill 8, was passed by bipartisan support at the Texas legislature, and I think it's very clear this case will be appealed. This is not the end of this case by a long shot. As we continue to see how important it is to have qualified judges on the bench who understand their role and don't try to legislate from the bench, it's very clear what the will of the legislature was, very clear the will of the Texas people. And, you know, in this case, it was also about protecting the dignity of unborn children that have been aborted. You even had religious institutions like the Catholic Church being willing to accept the responsibility of burying these unborn children after an abortion. So, you know, none of this case had anything to do with whether or not a woman has access or the ability to get an abortion. This is about what happens when a medical facility decides to dispose of the unborn baby after the abortion.
Well, the judge ruled differently. He said this was going to be an undue burden on the woman seeking to end an unwanted pregnancy.
Well, in this case really highlights the problem with a lot of federal judges that are on the bench today, is they want to take away the role of the legislature and use it for themselves in this type of case. And so for them to draw that type of conclusion when this case has nothing to do with the decision of a woman to have an abortion and nothing to do with the actual abortion procedure itself. It's about what happens after the baby's been aborted and the woman is likely long gone. And so that's what's important, and that's why it's so important what's going on this week as it relates to the judge being nominated and the hearings for Judge Brett Kavanaugh at the U.S. Supreme Court. And that was clear for voters. We believe this issue was on the ballot. President Trump talked about different judges that he had. He was transparent. He put out a list before the election. So when people went to the ballot box, they were essentially casting their vote based on which they felt which candidate would put certain judges. And that's what we're dealing with here. This is a federal court, and federal judges are appointed and nominated by the President of the United States, and they're on the bench for life. And so that's why it's really important what's going on. And we have seen appointments to the Fifth Circuit already from President Trump. So that's why we firmly believe that this is nowhere near the end of this case. And ultimately, we believe the state of Texas and the will of the people in Texas will prevail.
Well, you say the voters went to the polls and they selected President Trump knowing what kind of judges he would appoint, but the majority of voters did not select Donald Trump.
Well, it's very clear in the state of Texas what the election results were. It's very clear through our election process who the winner was in this case, and that is what happened. So the result of the election was Donald Trump won the election, and that's the way our process works.
Yes, but I'm just saying, you know, you use the election as some sort of confirmation that a majority of Americans support this, and they didn't. The majority of Americans who voted for the other candidate.
The election process was very clear who prevailed.
Well, you also brought up Brett Kavanaugh, who's looking at confirmation hearings to become justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. You think that it's clear where he is on these issues?
Whether or not we'll see that issue work its way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, again, I think it's very possible. And so if you have judges on the bench that simply apply these common sense standards consistently and look at the plain language of these statutes, I think they'll be upheld if we see these issues revisited at the Supreme Court with someone like Brett Kavanaugh.
So you see Brett Kavanaugh, if he gets to the Supreme Court, that he's going to rule in these cases that similar to the way you see them?
Well, differently than the court did with Anthony Kennedy.
What makes you think that? I mean, he says he hasn't thought about it yet.
Well, I think when we look at his work on the D.C. Circuit, we look at how qualified he is as a judge, and we look at other cases that he's been involved in, you see a pattern of a justice who sees it as important to respect the Constitution and to respect the rule of law. And that's what the state of Texas is doing in these cases. We're simply looking at situations where there's common sense regulations that are applied to medical facilities and other scenarios, but taking the abortion situation is the same.
How do you feel about the future trajectory about where things are going right now with the U.S. Supreme Court, with Donald Trump, with the appointments that he's making to the federal bench? Are you optimistic?
Well, look, I think you continue to see a generation of young people understand what's going on the issue of life and unborn life in the womb, and they want to see a consistent standard. I think things like that are gaining a lot more attention. They're gaining a lot more support and traction. And people are saying, you know, look, if the baby in the womb has a heartbeat, if it's close to that age where it has a heartbeat and it can be viable outside of the womb and it's at an earlier and earlier stage, that life should be protected. I think we're seeing that grow more, and people are understanding that. And that's something you're seeing from both sides of the political aisle, if you will. And so I think we're going to see these common sense, reasonable standards continue to get more traction, and I think we're going to see a difference in this case at the appellate level. We're going to see Texas prevail, and people are going to find more common ground on these type of issues.
But do you think Roe v. Wade will be overturned soon by the Supreme Court?
Oh, look, that's something that people are going to talk about, and we'll all wonder. We'll have to wait and see. It's certainly, if that's to happen, you know, that will certainly be an interesting issue and an impact on things in our state and our country. But you have to remember, if Roe versus Wade is overturned, then it just goes back to the states. Then the states get to decide as they did before. And so whether, you know, It's possible we could see that. We'll just have to wait and see what happens. But President Trump did say that he's going to put pro-life judges on the court.
Jonathan Sines is an attorney for Texas Values. He testified strongly in support of SB 8, a tough anti-abortion law that passed the last legislative session, a portion of it requiring the burial or cremation of abortion fetal tissue, was struck down this week. The Center for Reproductive Rights, along with Texas abortion providers, sued Texas over that fetal tissue law. Among others, the lawsuit was filed by Molly Duane, an attorney for the Center for Reproductive Rights.
Well, we are thrilled to see that the court faithfully applied precedent and recognized that women's constitutional rights to make decisions about their life, about family, and about reproduction, consistent with their own personal, moral, and religious beliefs, free of interference from the state. And that's really the opinion that we expected, and we're thrilled to see that the judge ruled that way.
There are those who see the ruling differently. They are appealing. The Texas Attorney General is appealing, and it will work its way up through the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, and who knows from there, maybe the U.S. Supreme Court. But they continue to say that there was no added burden to women by having a fetal tissue burial law. Can you kind of walk me through your view on that?
Sure. I think the important thing to recognize here is that the Constitution guarantees men, women, all people, the right to chart their own course in life, to make their own decisions about life, about reproduction, and to follow their own moral and spiritual beliefs. And what the court did in this opinion is recognize that enshrining the state's narrow view of pregnancy onto women and their families who themselves hold a diverse set of personal and religious beliefs is prohibited by the Constitution. And the court went further than that and said that doing so only increases the shame and stigma that women experience when accessing reproductive health care in Texas, and that alone is a burden on women, a burden that is prohibited by the Constitution.
I'm really not clear about, you know, who was going to pay for the burial and cremation and disposal of the fetal tissue. Who's going to write that check? Does that matter?
Well, I think the important thing to recognize here is that this law wasn't about protecting women's access to health care. It wasn't about allowing men and women and families to make their own decisions about reproduction and health care. It was about forcing the state's very narrow view onto all people who hold a diverse set of beliefs. And what the law does is put the onus on reproductive health care clinics, and that includes hospitals, it includes abortion clinics, it includes doctors' offices in rural areas, and say that they are forced to bear the burden of determining the logistics for how this law would operate in practice and for really carrying out the requirements. So it's not, the concern is not who pays for what, but it's really about the men and women and families who are impacted by this law, which forces them to subscribe to a very narrow set of beliefs that the state has attempted to enshrine into law.
But if a woman who needs to terminate an unwanted pregnancy and she doesn't have a lot of money, like a lot of people do, and adding another couple hundred dollars, that's another burden onto, if that's, I don't know how much it would cost to comply with the law, or if someone else would step in and says, oh, we'll pay for it, but still you have to deal with the fact that there's a lot of stigma and other issues that are involved with this process, which you see as completely and totally unnecessary and something that was ginned up in order to make women feel bad about having an abortion. Is that it?
Yes.
All right, so what happens now?
Yes, so the state has already announced that they will appeal this ruling, but what's important to keep in mind is that the reproductive health care providers in Texas have been here before. The Center for Reproductive Rights and other lawyers representing these health care providers have been here before, and we will continue to fight all the way up to the Supreme Court if necessary.
And the Supreme Court, it's in flux. We see Brett Kavanaugh going through his hearings presently, and the people from the pro-life side are very enthused about what he's going to do once he gets there. I mean, how do you feel?
Well, this opinion was very clear about the importance of precedent, and that has certainly been a topic that is in the news this week. I think what we have seen is that the threat to abortion access in this country is imminent and real, and that is why the Center for Reproductive Rights and Whole Woman's Health and other lawyers and advocates and healthcare providers around the country are continuing to fight. There are dozens of reproductive rights cases that are making their way through the lower courts and that could eventually end up in the Supreme Court. And so I think it's important for the public to recognize that the threat is real and to hold their representatives accountable.
Molly Duane is an attorney for the Center for Reproductive Rights. What is the future of reproductive rights in the United States? With the confirmation hearings underway for President Trump's latest nominee to the U.S. Supreme Court, Brett Kavanaugh, the future isn't bright. There are leaked documents that indicate that Kavanaugh does not view Roe v. Wade as settled law of the land, and he wrote that it could be overturned. But there are other leaked documents that also indicate that Kavanaugh has previously lied to the Senate. Eli Mistal says he's concerned. He's the executive editor of Above the Law, an online journal that covers the legal industry.
What we have here is an unusual situation where Kavanaugh has given testimony to Congress before and appears to have lied about it. Or he certainly appears to have materially misled the congressional committee about his involvement across a variety of issues. The one I think is most obvious here is his handling of his involvement with the Bill Pryor nomination. Bill Pryor is another conservative justice. He sits on the 11th Circuit. Ted Kennedy asked him directly if he was involved in that hearing. He said he has not handled that that hearing. While that might be technically true, it certainly doesn't seem to have answered the spirit of Kennedy's question and seems to have actually directly misled Kennedy about the question when it, as documents came out during the hearing that show that Kavanaugh, in fact, was involved, in fact, did go to meetings about Bill Pryor, it suggested Bill Pryor's nomination, and when other people were asking how Bill Pryor's hearing went, Kavanaugh sent an email saying, call me. So he was clearly kind of deeply knowledgeable about the ins and outs of that particular situation. But there have been other kind of, again, I don't want to say, it's always hard to prove a lie. But there certainly have been other inconsistencies in his prior testimony about his knowledge of this issue of the senator's emails being stolen by a Republican operative looking to do prep for confirmation hearings. Did Kavanaugh know about those emails? Was he involved in those emails? Well, documents show that he was on an email chain where the subject of the email was spying. From a Republican mole working from a mole in the Democratic Senate committee, and Kavanaugh claims he knew nothing about it and he had no idea the documents were stolen. Okay, as Pat Leahy, Democratic senator Pat Leahy said, I was born at night, but not last night. So I think that's how you get to this question of whether or not Kavanaugh lied, going from a misstatement to a misrepresentation to a lie to a perjury charge. That's quite difficult, right? You have to, there's a deeper analysis, a deeper trial that is required to really make that distinction. And I think that we should be thinking about having that trial. I think we should be thinking about asking those questions and bringing up that evidence.
Well, you don't even have to have a trial if you are really just focused on what's happening with these confirmation hearings. All you have to do is convince two Republican senators that there is something definitely amiss, and they may pull their support for Brett Kavanaugh, and suddenly we have to start over again.
Yes, you have to keep all the Democratic senators and flip two Republican senators in terms of a confirmation vote. And so the other thing that's going on here is the ways in which Kavanaugh is different and has has, I think, more damaging information out there about him compared to even Neil Gorsuch, who is, you know, another arch conservative, another person nominated by Trump, another justice who, a person who, when he was nominated, was trying to do the relatively unprecedented thing of filling a seat that was stolen from him by the Republicans in Congress when they refused to hold even a hearing on Merrick Garland. Neil Gorsuch was a far more normal Republican nominee than what we've seen from Kavanaugh. And so you wonder if that abnormality is going to be enough. It is not normal for a nominee to have written documentation where he says that Roe is not settled law, which we now have seen from Kavanaugh. It is certainly not normal for a nominee to have written documentation where he says that Roe is not settled law, and then in the hearings say that Roe is settled law. That's another misstatement, misinformation, misleading lie that he made during his hearing. It's not normal for a nominee to refuse to answer questions about judicial independence. Kavanaugh refused to rebuke Trump on Trump's attacks about judicial independence. Even Neil Gorsuch, in the hearing nominated by Trump, said that the president was wrong to attack the judiciary. Kavanaugh refused to say that. So I think that's a huge thing that's not normal. And then obviously, Kavanaugh's views on, and I don't want to get too legal nerdy, but Kavanaugh's views on what we call the unitary executive, the theory of executive power, are quite extreme. And again, not something that necessarily Neil Gorsuch signed on to. In Kavanaugh's theory, the president cannot be indicted by the Department of Justice while he's president. That's why we, I mean, if people maybe have heard this debate about whether or not he believes Nixon could have been indicted. He's been unclear about that, which is, I mean, shocking. Obviously, that means that it's not at all clear that he believes that President Trump can be indicted as president. And he has also said that he refuses to recuse himself from any potential litigation involving President Trump. And he won't tell us whether or not he's talked to President Trump or President Trump's lawyers about the possibility of Trump being indicted.
We talk about settled law, particularly when we're talking about Roe v. Wade. What does that mean, settled law? Is there anything really that is settled? I mean, the Supreme Court can pretty much overturn anything they want, right?
Yes and no, right? There, at a kind of raw power level, sure. The Supreme Court can overturn anything that it wants at any point. Segregation was settled law, and until it wasn't, right? Until the Supreme Court decided that was wrong, settled law. So settled law does not imbue a decision with any particular special magical powers. On the other hand, there are live issues in the law which involve consistent debate between factions, parties, ideologies about how we should interpret certain phrases or certain sections, right? So if you look at, I don't know, the 14th Amendment, right? It's the settled law that the 14th Amendment exists, but the scope of it, how what it means, how it should be applied, who it should be applied to, that's all still actually, there's a lot of debate within the 14th Amendment about how it should be applied. I wouldn't call certain aspects of the 14th Amendment settled law.
So are you talking about birthright citizenship? Are you talking about who is seen as a protected class?
No. I would definitely call birthright citizenship settled law, and I would definitely call protected classes settled law. I'm talking more about substantive due process. How far the laws have to be applied equally?
That would challenge you on that and say that birthright citizenship is not settled law, and they want to see it revisited.
Yeah, but those people are kind of clearly wrong, right? But, and that's what I'm talking about with settled law. Like, yes, there are people who would challenge me on birthright citizenship. There are people who would challenge me on climate change. There are people who would challenge me on whether or not it's 12 o'clock or 12:30. That doesn't, everybody who would challenge that doesn't make them right. The main of legal interpretation is very settled on something like birthright citizenship. It's very settled on something like protected classes. It is fairly settled on something like Roe v. Wade. Does that mean people agree with it necessarily? No, that, of course not. Obviously, we debate abortion rights all the time. Doesn't mean that there is no disagreement. Settled law means that there is a standard interpretation that has been applied over and over and over and over again, relatively consistently for a relatively long period of time.
So are you saying that if Kavanaugh survives the hearings and he gets confirmation and gets on the court, that it's highly unlikely that they will overturn Roe v. Wade?
I do not personally think that the court would be so bold as to overturn Roe v. Wade directly in the same way that the court once overturned segregation directly. I think what's not only more likely, but most likely, is that with Kavanaugh on the court, they have 5 votes to undercut Roe v. Wade in various ways that will make abortion effectively illegal in any state that chooses to make it so, but doesn't completely overturn the decision, which potentially, and again, we don't know the, I don't know the contours of how it's going to look, but will potentially leave open the possibility for states who want to have abortion legal to still do that, right?
So, so I don't think they will put in restrictions like the heartbeat restrictions and other things that would really limit the window, the availability, undue burden would become more and more burdensome, those types of things.
Exactly.
So this would all be so much more fascinating, what's happening with these hearings with Brett Kavanaugh, if the appearance wasn't that the fix was in, that this guy is going to get on the court.
Interesting. I mean, I feel like but at some level, the fix is always in, right? Like, it's rare to have a confirmation hearing even as contentious as this one. I mean, I think we've been inured to the fact that confirmation hearings aren't necessarily supposed to be like this, right? And I think that's on. I think that's true on both sides. Like, it wasn't always the case that we made our confirmation hearings a series of litmus tests about how a judge is going to rule on this case or that case or whatever. Now, I would also argue that it wasn't always the case that we would nominate judges with extreme views on either side. We used to nominate justices that were a little bit more moderate, a little bit more middle ground, and we also used to not grill them about the contours of their political ideologies as much as we see today. It used to be much more about, like, well, are you qualified? And we've lost that. Depending on which side you're on, you're going to debate exactly when it was lost, exactly who caused us to lose it. I'm less interested in that debate and more kind of concerned with the fact that that is completely lost and that our confirmation process is, I think what we're seeing, I think what we saw with Kavanaugh, I think what we saw with Gorsuch's nomination, I think what we saw with Merrick Garland not being able to get a hearing, I think it's pretty clear that our confirmation process is broken in some fundamental way, is not what the founders intended it to be, and that we should be very concerned about fixing the confirmation process as much as we're concerned about getting, depending on your political philosophy, the right judges on the court.
Ellie Mistal is the executive editor of Above the Law, an online journal that covers the legal industry. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You could also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can listen to past Texas Matters episodes, and you could also find us wherever you get your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.